Your argument in free flow versus natural resources. Are you ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Justice Berger, Justice Holland, Justice Steele. May it please the court, my name is Mike Teachman from Parkowski, Girk & Swayze, and we represent the appellant in this matter. If the court will allow, I've asked for 5 minutes in reserve for rebuttal or to answer other questions the court might have.
Well, the clock will count down. When the yellow light comes on, that will be the beginning of your 5 minutes. You can keep speaking, but you'll be using your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Justice Holland. Your Honors, we are here because the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control developed and implemented a methodology for placing Title V sources into base fee categories under Section 6097D of Title VII without ever exposing that methodology to public scrutiny and without ever putting that methodology down into a writing that could be applied uniformly from one source to another throughout the life of the statute. So this case, members of the court, isn't about an annual fee of $18,000 versus an annual fee of $7,500. It's really about the protections that Delaware law affords its citizens against the risk, the potential of arbitrary and capricious actions that Delaware administrative agencies might take. The issues before the court are not whether evidence in the record supports any particular factual findings of the Environmental Appeals Board or of DENREC, for that matter, but whether the methodology that was developed and utilized by DENREC to sort these sources was, in fact, consistent with the statutory mandate of Section 6097D, and more importantly, whether DENREC's failure to reduce this methodology into a written form and to properly adopt it as a regulation violates the rule that this court set forth in Butler v. Insurance Commissioner, and whether that violates the Administrative Procedures Act.
Can I interrupt, and maybe I'm asking too broad a question here, but where is it written that there has to be a regulation for this?
The authority for DENREC to adopt a regulation, it appears in Section 60.
No, I know the DENREC has the authority to adopt regulations. You're complaining because there is no regulation here. And what I'm asking you is, by what authority are you saying that there must be? Not that they have the power to. I know they've got the power to. But you're claiming that they were required to adopt a regulation, and having failed to do so, this fee is not properly being imposed. So I'm asking you, where does it say that for DENREC to charge a fee, it must have a regulation?
Your Honor, the authority for that comes from the Administrative Procedures Act. This particular activity, the implementation of Section 6097D requires a great deal of discretion to be exercised by the agency, by DENREC. In other words, no Title V source can ever look at Section 6097D and know, other than the synthetic miners, they know who they are, but for the rest of those Title V sources, nobody knows. So it's a great exercise of discretion, and that exercise of discretion, the development of the formula, the methodology in order to implement the statute, falls within the definition of regulation under the Administrative Procedures Act.
Okay, give me the section and the language that you say mandates that they adopt a regulation for this fee.
Well, there is nothing, of course, in the statute itself, in Section 6097, that says you must adopt a regulation.
Right, I understand, but you're saying in the Administrative Procedures Act there's something that requires this to be done by regulation. And find me the section and tell me why it says you must have a regulation here.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, I think we'll all agree that with respect to the adoption of regulations, DENREC is covered under the Administrative Procedures Act. It's not for purposes of case decisions, but it is for purposes of adopting regulations. So a regulation under the Administrative Procedures Act is any statement of, in
what
this
are you
case,
reading from?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It is Section 10102 of Title 29, sub 7.
Okay.
And it's the definition of regulation.
Okay. And it says what?
It says that it's any statement of, in this case, it's a statement of procedure formulated by an agency as a rule or standard, or as a guide for the decision of cases they're under. And that's exactly what happened in this case. Denrec developed a methodology, a formula, to use in order to decide which Title V sources should pay which fee.
Well, if we look at 7-6097, at least at the range where your client is being charged, the statute itself specifically talks about a number of hours.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if, in fact, you can demonstrate that number of hours was spent, why do they need more than that?
Well, Your Honor, it's an estimate of hours is what the statute commands. It commands it then, and even after the reenactment of the statute, it still requires that Denrec conduct an estimate of hours spent performing services. And if you look at the base fee statute, you'll see there's a whole range of services to be provided. So Denrec needs to decide which hours are we going to use. Are we just going to use engineering personnel? Are we going to use secretarial support staff? There's lots of different hours that we could, man hours that we could use, and there are many different permutations or possibilities of a time frame within which we're going to conduct these estimates. And I hope that answers your question. It's a great degree of discretion that Denrec must apply. No Title V source can look at sections.
You're saying that the General Assembly left it up to or mandated that Denrec define the term hours by adopting a regulation.
Denrec was charged with figuring out how to conduct the estimate, because there are many ways to conduct that estimate. And there are many different man hours that could be included in those Title V, those base fee services. Again,
is there any reason in this record to think that the hours that were attributed to your client's application were incorrect, or some were included that I understand that they looked at it historically, you know, to make their future projection, but except for that historic use of hours, was there any suggestion that the hours attributed to what they were going to do were incorrect or inappropriate?
The hours were used as in their words, a validation of what they did. And you'll notice in our briefs, we show you that there are two different versions of those hours. The broader point is that the hours can only validate the methodology of estimating once you've established the parameters for what that estimate's going to be.
Well, I guess the difficulty that we'd like you to help us with is whether or not this statute is self-executing, which most statutes are, and your position is, as a matter of law, this was not a self-executing statute. It needed the adoption or implementation of regulations.
Absolutely. And the best way to illustrate that is the difference between the user fee and the base fee statute. The user fee is self-executing. The user fee statute says you're going to pay, you a Title V source are going to pay a specific fee based upon your emissions inventory. And that's an external benchmark. There's no application of discretion there. The same is true with the synthetic miners. Everybody knows who a synthetic miner is. We all can see from the base fee statute that they pay $3,000. That's self-executing. But with respect to the remaining 100 or so Title V sources, none of them can look at that statute. Nobody, not even the Secretary of Denrec, can look at Section 6097D and know which Title V source is going to pay which fee until after his staff has developed a methodology for conducting these estimates. And I submit to you that depending upon how that methodology is developed, you could have very different results in terms of which source pays which fee.
Now, perhaps you can help me with some confusion I have. If I can go back a moment to Justice Berger's original subject matter and her question. Somewhere in your brief, I can't point to the specific page, you make the statement, I believe, that everything that the Secretary and his staff does is either a regulation or a case decision. There's no other act that they take that could be characterized in any other way. And in the Superior Court's opinion, it says it really doesn't matter here whether it's a case decision or a requirement for a regulation. It's simply implementing what's clear on the face of the statute. If I read your brief incorrectly, on the first conclusion that everything, every act they take is either a case decision or a regulatory implementation?
Let me clarify that. I think there are probably internal actions that don't involve the rights and obligations of third parties that an administrative agency could take that wouldn't fall within the definition of agency action. It wouldn't need to. The purpose of the Administrative Procedures Act really is to standardize agency procedures and to give the public a voice. Agency action, if you look at the definition in the APA, I'll paraphrase it for you. It's either a case decision or the regulation. That's how the provision reads. But then it goes on to say when it is used as a basis for, and it lists a number of things, and here when it's used as a basis for the award or denial of a right or a benefit. And here the award or denial of a right or a benefit is the assignment of a high fee category or a low fee category. So in this case, Your Honor, when you've got a situation where the agency is applying its discretion and altering the rights and obligations of the regulated public, we urge that it is one or the other. And in this case, it falls very clearly, we think, within that definition of regulation. With respect to the court's holding in Butler, if I could touch upon that for a minute. The holding in Butler really centered on the insurance department's inadequacy in its processes when it developed an unwritten rule that was applicable to insurance agents who had their licenses revoked. And the rule was a rather simple and benign one, but you've got to take some ethics courses before we'll consider you for a relicensure. The problem is that the department's failure to publish the unwritten rule exposed regulated persons such as Mr. Butler to the risk of arbitrary and capricious action. So the holding in Butler wasn't that Mr. Butler was treated differently or that the insurance department exceeded its authority. The problem is that the insurance department failed to follow procedures that are designed to protect and safeguard against the risk of, to protect the public from the risk of arbitrary and capricious action. So if the policy wasn't reduced to a written regulation.
What I'm having trouble with is the statute that talks about hours. So the statute quantifies hours. Everyone's on notice. If this many hours are expended, you're going to be in this category. And it seems that anyone who's being regulated can challenge the way the hours were computed, the number of hours, what were the different activities that counted for the purpose of hours. Why isn't that enough protection?
Your Honor, if the statute was that specific, if the statute said the base fee shall be assigned based upon actual hours expended performing services, and originally that's what we thought that Denrick had done. If the statute said that, and if the statute defined with specificity which hours we're going to look at, engineers, support staff, even the secretary's time, if all of that were included in the statute, then it would be specific enough. There wouldn't be any discretion left for the secretary to really apply. But here, all of that's open. The Section 6097D doesn't give us any guidance on how the estimate is going to be conducted, and it's left with the secretary. That's okay, but in order...
Well, it says in the statute, these... It talks about hours spent for performing services, and then it lists the services. Now, we've construed a lot of statutes that are intended to be illustrative or exclusive, and we can decide later what this statute said. But assuming that the hours were used and that related to these examples, why isn't that enough? It would seem if hours were included that weren't in the examples, then maybe you could say, well, that's not in the statute. But hypothetically speaking, if it says services include the following activities, and there's a list, and the hours are spent on those activities, and they exceed whatever the levels are here in the statute, why do you need, what else would you see in a regulation?
Well, what I would see, again, is a period of time. So if your period of time, Your Honor, was 10 years, probably everybody's going to fall into the very complex category. That can't be what it meant. If we're only looking at engineering personnel, then the period, the relevant period of time that the secretary selects is probably going to be a lot bigger than if we include in support staff. The real point here is that there's very, very many different ways to apply this statute.
And then you're into your rebuttal time. Did you want to highlight any of your other arguments or just reserve your time?
Your Honor, I think I'll reserve my time. Thank you.
Good morning. Well, now the afternoon.
May it please the Court. Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Valerie Chesmadia, and I represent the Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control. As Justice Berger has pointed out, the real question in this case is whether the Secretary was required to adopt a regulation before it could categorize the 147 large stationary sources of criteria air pollutants in Delaware. The implication of the answer is whether all administrative agencies must adopt regulations before they can follow specific directives in the statute, whether even when a statute is self-executing, the department must further elaborate by adopting regulations.
Doesn't that beg the question when you say that the statute is specific and it implements itself, it's self-executing? Did you review the list of variables that are in your opponent's brief on page 21 about the methodology for estimating hours? And can you assure us that when the Secretary and his department staff make decisions as to individual Title V or Act V, whatever you want to call it, polluters, that they are applying a uniform methodology across the board to each of them?
The testimony in the record was that the three experts, Mr. Mirzakhalili with 17 years of experience, Mr. Taggart with 30 years of experience, and Ms. Terranova with 10 years of experience, sat down, looked at all of the sources, and categorized them based on the factors that he described in the transcript, and they are set out.
Well, were those subject to public review, and was there an opportunity for those who would be regulated as a result of that decision to comment on the way in which they were executing the policy of the statute?
No, Your Honor. There wasn't a requirement in the statute, and they did not do that. But the factors that they describe are directly linked to the range of services that are set out explicitly in the statute, the ones that the Secretary was told to consider. The first factor, the complexity of the source's emissions and control technology, it directly relates to the length of time and complexity of permit issuance and renewal issuance. It relates to the needs for emissions inventories and ambient air monitoring, and relates to the impacts of control strategy development. The second factor cited by Mr. Mirzakhalili, applicable regulatory requirements and regulations, relates to stationary source regulation development, complexity of permit and renewal issuance, control strategy development, and ambient air monitoring. The third factor that he discussed, the emission rates of the source, it relates to ambient monitoring, emissions inventory, and control strategy development.
Well, let's assume for a moment that all of the factors that they've listed that you've just repeated are reasonable, as I understand the board to have found, the Board of Environmental Appeals.
Yes, sir.
How does the public know that that's the methodology that's being used, and when or did they ever have a chance to comment on it?
There was no chance to comment on it except through the development process. The legislation that set out the services to be considered and the estimations of the hours were part of a process undertaken by the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, the structure for them objecting, for the polluters objecting, the permittees, would be to fail to pay the fee that's assessed, and their failure to pay subjected them to the loss of their permit and their opportunity to do business, correct?
Potential, Your Honor. In this case, the department issued a notice of violation. They contested this. Even before they contested it and asked for the hearing, the department gave them information. It's noted in the record there were 18 other sources who asked for some information about the hours that were considered. I have just a second. I can tell you.
My final question is, tell me or tell us why this is not an act that constitutes the basis for implementing a regulation, adopting and implementing a regulation. Why is it just an administrative decision in an office?
Your Honor, there are 147 sources here, and the structure of this program is to get the amount of money necessary to run this program. They take the pot that they need to run it, and it was supposed to be split up among the polluters, so the people of the state of Delaware didn't have to pay for oversight of this program. There were time frames involved. The department could have adopted a regulation. I absolutely agree that they could have under their general authority in Chapter 60, but there was nothing that required them to because it was so specifically set out.
So is that your answer, that the statute's specific? Because that's one of the things the court is looking for with some help. Mr. Teachman cites the Administrative Procedures Act, and we know in, for example, the wetland section that DNREC oversees, there's a specific statutory direction to adopt regulations. And what we have here is a statute that you're arguing is specific, and Mr. Teachman's arguing calls for regulations. How do we make that determination? Simply by the court's assessment of the specificity in the statute?
I believe so, Your Honor. Also, the statute itself was specific in the estimation, and the record shows that documentation was provided to validate those estimations. The department also, I'm skipping back a little, saying that they'd be deprived of their permit, has never revoked FP International's permit. They sent them the notice of violation. They have not sent them notices of violations on further years to allow them time to come before the court and to allow them to ensure that the department didn't do anything wrong. I mean, they took their expertise, they applied it to the statute as they were directed, categorized the sources, provided validation before a proceeding was instituted, and has gone forward through the proceedings, providing them with information and guaranteeing them their right to make sure that the secretary acted in a fair and reasonable manner. And they haven't disputed the factual findings.
So your position is, with regard to your last statement, haven't disputed the factual findings, and that if you take the statute 60-97 and you look at D, where the activities are listed, that the hours and the listed activities correlate as far as this application is concerned, and that's not in dispute.
Right.
The assertion is, whether that's correct or not, you didn't adopt regulations, therefore we don't have to pay the money.
Yes, Sean, I believe that is fair. Not. Looking at the two cases cited by the FP International, in Christiana versus Board of Education, there was a specific statute in that case that said the board could adopt regulations for one of specifically enumerated reasons. One, to determine the hours of daily school sessions and the days on which teachers may participate in educational activities. In that case, the board just changed the school hours for purposes of teacher education without adopting a regulation. And the court found that that was wrong, that it needed to have adopted a regulation, that it basically been spoken on that was the mechanism for to be followed to change the school dates. That's a similar situation in the Butler case cited by FP International. In that case, the statute specifically required the commissioner may promulgate regulations and or prerequisites, which will establish reasonable standards and criteria for requiring additional or continuing education of licensees. And that's the critical issue in that case. They sought to reinstate his license and add additional requirements and argue that it was their policy at the time. This is something.
So are you saying that if the enabling statute doesn't make reference to either the need for regulations or make a suggestion that the administrative body may pass regulations about this, that in other cases, such as the statute at issue here, the administrative agency has discretion whether it wants to promulgate regulations or not?
If the statute is sufficiently specific as it is in this case. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, but the question of whether it's sufficiently specific is a little bit vague because one person could find it specific and another person could say, well, not really. Is there some more objective way to resolve it than just our own view of what's specific enough?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Things are subject to reading and interpretation, which is one of the reasons that we have administrative agencies to use their expertise, because the legislature doesn't have the expertise of the agency that's involved. And we also have recourse to ensure that the agency has acted properly, as we believe they did in this case.
Well, what you're saying, I think, is that the agency in the first instance should be making the determination whether the statute is specific enough.
That
seems to be what you're saying.
Sense from a working perspective. If you give the agency a statute and tell them to implement it, if the agency feels confident on its face, it would seem to me to be the appropriate course of action to implement it. If they want to add detail by regulations, that's a good thing. If they feel that it needs to have detail added by regulations, that would be another instance. I don't know another way of drawing the line.
Well, let's follow up on that. Let's assume the statute says your standard for determining the base fee is estimates of time that Denrec spends performing services, because as you pointed out, the public shouldn't have to bear the burden of permitting polluters. The polluters should be including that expense of monitoring as a cost of doing business, and hopefully they'll pass it on to somebody outside Delaware and not just keep a revolving door and send it right back to Delawareans anyway. So we don't get too complicated in our cost-benefit analysis. But when they say estimate the time spent performing services, is that definite enough? What kinds of services are to be included for what kinds of permittees under what circumstances, both in terms of time spent in the past, estimated of services going forward, what kind of services are going to be included and what not? Isn't that precisely the kind of thing that an agency then seizes upon to produce a standard for the regulated public to review and take comment on whether it's fair for you to include janitorial services for the officer of the engineer, for the office of the engineer who actually inspects the plant, or secretarial services, or out-of-pocket cost or not? And how can you be assured that the estimate, as loose as that might be argued, is going to be applied uniformly to each of the permittees across the board without a regulation that sets all that forward?
Well, the statute does say spent, and it uses the past tense, which is the way that the agency interpreted it. And if you look at the facts of the case, the agency gave timesheets to validate that were not secretarial services, although certainly given the criteria in the statute under what should be covered, the small business stationary source tech and environmental compliance program, just the whole program, and the accidental release prevention program, those are things that should be covered. Those would include other types of services. This is certainly a case where the department could have enacted a regulation, but it's also a short-term fee-setting program that was set to sunset. It sunsets in 2005, and I believe part of this program was also a process to implement a better tracking system for the amount of hours to be spent, and perhaps this will be an easier question the next time the statute comes up. But what we have here is a case where everyone was categorized in the same manner by the same three experts with over 60 or close to 60 years experience. They applied the statute, they produced the documentation, and although FreeFlow says that this is not about the permit fee, if your honors would look at the letter in the secretary's appendix from FT when this first started, it says that the and let me find this citation. It says that the Title V fee has been a source of irritation to FP International for the entire time, and that was when it was only $7,000.
Well, we don't want to start with the remarkable proposition that no one likes to be taxed No one likes to pay fees to government. I think that might well apply to 90% of the people in this room. The question here is, the methodology here clear enough and fair enough for the regulated public to believe that they've been treated fairly?
I think that the evidence in the record is that other sources did inquire, and they were provided with information, and they were satisfied. And FP International did inquire, and information was provided in the record before the board that satisfied them and the Superior Court, and the Secretary believes, which will satisfy the Supreme Court, that they were treated fairly, that they weren't treated any differently, and that they were classified appropriately. Just addressing briefly the issue of whether this was a regulation or a case decision, the definition of regulation in 29 Delaware Code 1001.027 means a statement of law, procedure, policy, right, requirement, or prohibition formulated or promulgated by an agency as a rule or standard or as a guide for the decision of cases thereafter by it or by any other agency, court, authority, or court. The Secretary does not believe that its action in categorizing these sources constituted a regulation. If it had sat down and wrote up a methodology and decided that this many hours in this category and made a formalized process instead of simply following the statute, that would have been a regulation for making each, that would govern all of the decisions that were made. In this case, the Secretary has argued all along that its action was more akin to a case decision. It looked at the statute, it looked at FP International just as it looked at all the other sources, and it said that, and it estimated, which is not an exact science, as it was asked to, the number of hours that had been, the number of hours spent performing services. The best estimation the Secretary would put out of future services are past services. In this instance, the Title V permits expire in 3 to 5 years. It's a process designed to take all the other requirements from all the other permits relating to criteria air pollutants and put them all together into one document so the public and the regulating entity can easily access the information and perhaps add additional record-keeping requirements, again, to ease and aid the government and the community in enforcement efforts. Part of this is developing additional regulations to meet the tightening NAAQS. In this instance, the United States is soon to be developing the 8-hour ozone standard, which will lower the NAAQS standard for ground-level ozone, which will affect the regulations and the requirements in these permits. The alternative RACT requirement that will need to be developed for FP International is discussed in the brief. These are all the types of services discussed in the statute that will need future expenditures of time. As the brief says, this is not, and even though it's a smaller source, it's not a simple source, and it requires oversight and review and regulation. And the state believes that its action, if anything, is a case decision, although Judge Tolliver may very well have it right that it was neither. Do you have any further questions?
No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There was a question from the court respecting the specificity of the statute that was directed to Ms. Chismadia. And in considering whether or not the statute is sufficiently specific, ask yourselves if there's anything in the statute that prevents the Secretary from making an estimate that's 10 years or more in length. Pretty soon, every single Title V source will be in the very complex category. That can't be what the statute was intended. There has to be some reasonable limits that the Secretary has to put on the estimates, the methodology, in order to make the sorting of sources into base fee categories work.
Do you agree that this provision will
be sunsetted next year?
Yes, Your Honor, just as it was sunsetted in 2002 and reenacted. It was reenacted without substantive change. So the same exact statutory mandate that was in place in 1999 was reenacted without change in 2002, and it, as far as we know, they'll do it again. I can only speculate. With respect to the question of uniformity that I believe Justice Steele may have asked the state, of course Denmark's going to say, well, we applied our methodology uniformly to everybody, just as I'm sure the insurance department would say, we treated Mr. Butler just the same as we treated every other insurance agent in his position. The question is, that's really not the question. The question is whether or not the lack of placing this methodology into a written regulation exposes everybody that's affected by it to the risk that they won't be treated in a uniform manner. And in that respect, consider that Mr. Koska back there and Ali Mirzakhalili and Daryl Tyler, I think those were the three people that were charged with developing this, they might all one day decide they don't want to work for the state anymore. And they'll go and they'll leave and work for the private sector. Well, now that unwritten methodology has to be applied by somebody else. And without having it in a written format, we'll never know that the folks that take that job over from them will apply it in the same way, apply the same criteria in the same way. And the same is true just with respect to a list of 100 sources. I'm sure it was not an easy task. It took them I have no idea how long it took them, but I'm sure it was a difficult task. And there's no way for us to know that when they looked at Allen Family Foods and they applied the criteria that they decided they were going to use, that would be the same criteria applied in the same way with the same weight with Zeneca Pharmaceuticals at the end of the list. So that's the reason we need this put down in a written regulation. That's what we think Butler was all about, and we think it's very, very much applicable to this circumstance. There was mention in the state's argument about the chance to comment on the methodology. We urge the court that there was never a chance for the public to comment on the methodology utilized by DENREC to conduct the estimates, to place sources into Title V, these base fee categories. Yes, there was some opportunity to comment with respect to the development of the statute because the chamber was involved. But even the chamber said, hey, DENREC, we're making these recommendations, and we're taking your rankings at face value. You've got to publish the criteria that you used in order to gain industry acceptance. Had they done that and done it in the form of a properly adopted regulation, we wouldn't be here today. Everybody in the industry would have had a chance to comment on the methodology, the criteria that was used. And at the end of the day, there would be a written set of criteria in the form of a regulation that we would know would be applied uniformly and fairly, not just in 1999, but again in 2002, and presumably again when the statute is reenacted.
You've been making a general argument about this statute in absence of regulations and the potential for mischief. Was there any argument ever made to the Superior Court that, as applied, what happened was unfair to your client?
Yeah, that was the third prong of our argument. We really haven't addressed it today. But we did argue that as a practical matter, what the state did wasn't conducting estimates at all. In fact, what they did is place sources into categories based on their perceptions of complexity. We don't think that's consistent with the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we will adjourn.
Please rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All manner of persons having anything before the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware may now depart and give their attendance to the call of the court. The court is now adjourned. God save the state and the honorable court.